WBZ H910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. Efforts to finalize a Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal between Israel and Hamas appear to be closer than ever. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan signaled both the Biden administration and President-elect Trump's transition teams are putting on a united front in negotiations.
Sullivan said they are, quote, on the brink of reaching a deal after an aggressive push in recent weeks.
There's a couple of reasons for why this is happening, the biggest one of which is that Israel has achieved its substantial military objectives in Gaza.
Karen Travers, ABC News, the White House.
Inauguration Day now, 1 week out. President-elect Trump will be sworn into office amid tight security due to what authorities call a heightened threat environment. Fire crews in Los Angeles County racing to contain major wildfires and douse hotspots with hurricane-force winds back in the mix starting tonight. The Eaton and Palisades fires are blamed for at least 24 deaths. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources is asking residents to cut back on salt use during the winter months to help protect the state's waterways. Salt is commonly used to make roads and walkways safer during the winter, but DNR data found that chloride levels in the state's rivers has risen dramatically over the last 20 years. Officials are recommending residents use less salt by shoveling their driveways before ice forms and switching to a more effective ice melter than salt when temperatures start to dip below 15 degrees. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers has announced the approval of funding for University of Wisconsin system projects through the State Building Commission. According to a press release, the commission approved a comprehensive budget adjustment for the projects that had previously been delayed by state Republicans. The approval will reallocate over $70 million for UW building projects that had already been approved by the commission, including a nearly $30 million expansion to the UW-Madison Engineering Building. The City of Superior is considering expanding an initiative to add second-story housing options for buildings with ground-floor storefronts. Cities across Wisconsin are struggling with the increased price of homes and the overall lack of housing stock. Planning officials say the City of Superior needs at least 1,000 more housing units to meet the current need. One solution would be working with the owners of retail properties to create more housing in existing buildings with things like tax incentives or low-interest loan programs. The Barron County Executive Committee has expressed unanimous support for a project to bring broadband to underserved communities. Officials with Brightspeed presented their proposal to the committee at their meeting last week and seek to fund the project through the State Public Service Commission's Broadband Equity Access and Development Program. Officials say receiving the letter of endorsement from the committee increases the likelihood of receiving grant funding for the projects to expand the essential connectivity services. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
The Packers surrender to the Eagles. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Packers losing to the Eagles in Philadelphia 22-10. Keyshawn Nixon fumbling the opening kickoff. Jordan Love threw three interceptions. I asked Packers safety Xavier McKinney how he thought the defense played.
I thought we played well defensively. We just didn't get turnovers, so they had, what, four? Yeah, four. So, I mean, it's going to be tough when it's like that, the ratio is like that. So, yeah.
The Eagles star receiver, A.J. Brown, caught on camera reading a book on the sidelines during the game.
That's a book that I bring every single game. And, you know, my teammates call it The Recipe. You know, that's the first time I heard that y'all got me on camera. Yeah. It got a lot of points in there, a lot of mental parts about it. But for me, you know, this game is mental.
NBA, the Bucks losing to the Knicks in New York, 140-106. The team returns home. Tomorrow night, they'll host the Kings. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Sunny and cold today, with high temperatures only tapping the single digits and winds blustery, gusting up to 25 miles per hour, making our wind chills feel sub-zero all day long. And a few flurries flying around this evening with no accumulations expected. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 2 degrees below zero.
Matt Nair on air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin. I'm always thrilled to be here.
Unbridled.
The enthusiasm
enjoyment.
Brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt Nair on air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Donald J. Trump has been officially certified the winner of the 2024 election the way that the Constitution dictates. You see how simple that is? There's a vote, you certify the results, democracy moves on. You might not like the results. The person I wanted to have elected didn't win, but that's the way democracy works. Unlike 4 years ago on January 6th, where rioters stormed the Capitol.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Dom Selvia.
Next time, our favorite Delano Democrat, Harvey K., will join us. Are Republicans really planning $5 trillion in spending offsets to Medicare and the ACA to fund tax cuts for the rich? Tune in.
The Dom Selvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6. This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Happy Monday, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm enjoying the bright, sunshiny weather, but boy, it makes it a little tough on Mondays when it is this gosh darn cold. Oh my goodness, I hope you are all staying warm out there. We're going to try to keep the conversation hot, given all the news of the day, because right here at Civic Media, we're all about real news and great conversation. I got Cardi with me on the board today. And if you've been listening to the show, you may know that I have this tiny little dog. It's an 11 and a half pound miniature dachshund. Because I enjoy irony, I'm a great big tall person, so I figured, oh, I'll get a tiny dog. Suffice it to say, tiny dogs with very little to no fur. I don't even, if you'd call what Finny's got fur, because she's a smooth coat dachshund. It's more like a million little eyelashes. Suffice it to say, the dog has very little fat, very little fur. And she basically will get all excited to go outside. I'll open up the door. And she does not want to go. And this is with like fully bundled tiny little dog. In other words, I'm really sorry to say and or admit that I've now become the person that I used to make fun of a lot, Cardi, if you know what I mean. Like I bought myself a nicer car because I drive more now and I get all worried about it getting dinged. So I'm parking in the corner of the parking lot. I used to make fun of those people. I've now got a tiny dog that requires a little jacket and booties and I'm all worried about her all the time. I used to make fun of those people. Now those people are me.
Hey,
should I be concerned or is this just like fully middle age? What do you think?
I think it's all in a day's time. It was meant for you to have that.
Right? Oh my goodness. I will always hopefully retain the ability to laugh at myself. These two things, no exception. Again, hope you and your little or big pets are staying warm out there. It is a chilly one. Also, just be sure to bring your sunglasses if you're driving because the sun is blindingly bright this afternoon. Cardi, did you watch the Packers yesterday? Oh,
I did. And I was actually going for the Packers despite them not being my favorite team ever. It was crazy. I was so disappointed.
Wait. News is being made. Mr. Cardi, producer extraordinaire. What do you mean you're not a Packers fan? Do explain.
All right. So when Mike McCarthy decided that he wanted to leave the Packers, I decided not to be a fan of the Packers. But even before that, Troy Aikman was my favorite quarterback going into the Deion Sanders era.
Okay, well, this is a little generational, right? Like, I can give you a little Dallas love, although forget you, Jerry Johnson and Jimmy. Like, just not my favorite guys. But I was a huge Emmitt Smith fan.
Yep.
Huge Emmitt Smith fan growing up. So I can grant you, Deion was a little bit munch, but I've enjoyed watching him as a college football coach. I'll grant you that, too. Yeah, well, the man is entertaining. We cannot dispute that. And I certainly understand the Aikman, Deion Sanders era. Okay, but you are a native Wisconsinite, so but for the Cowboys, you root for the Packers. Am I getting this mostly correct?
Yeah. If they're here, I definitely will root for the Packers. I am a huge Milwaukee Bucks fan, so I'll give you that.
We'll see, different sport now, friend.
Yeah, I agree. But we're talking state sports.
So your cover is I'm a homer about certain sports, and you're a homer for the Bucks. Well, I appreciate that. Listen, I don't think anybody thought this was going to likely go very well for the Packers. Playing in Philadelphia is always a challenge. Certainly, playoff atmosphere, Philadelphia, even more of a challenge. And you take the Eagles with the number one defense in the league. It was really funny to me listening to the most attractive man to have ever played football do commentary, right? Like, first of all, I need to not see Tom Brady's face when the commentary is happening. It's like, you're too handsome to look at. I just get lost in the deep blue pools. And, you know, so I tend to do other things while Tom Brady's doing the commentary. And he does know a ton about football, and I find his commentary good. But basically, Brady's commentary I could have done, because it was like, boy, this is sure going to be challenging for the Packers, and the Eagles have that number one defense in the league. Like, that was the sum total of the main themes of the day, and certainly it came true. It got to the point in the game, Cardi, I don't know about you, where I kept thinking, if you're LaFleur, other than having a meticulously groomed, I don't really call it a beard, but it's not really a goatee either. Other than that, and like the cut-in part, other than having bizarrely fastidious grooming, do you start thinking to yourself as Matt LaFleur, gee whiz, do I get my guys out of this game lest anyone else get hurt? It kind of felt like you maybe have to be thinking about protect mode. It was just devastating for the Packers, looking for updates on those injuries in the next few days. But man, not an easy end of the season to the Packers. The score was closer than the game play actually indicated. And wow, Jones, basically the guy putting the team on his back, trying to put up some yards and at least get some points on the board. It was a painful game, a whimper to the end of this season for the Packers. It'll be, where do they go from here? How bad are the injuries? All of our inquiring minds want to know. And to you Bears fans out there, you didn't even make the playoffs, so hush, hush. I don't want to hear it. Folks, it was painful for me. So I'm going to be throwing all of my cheering weight behind the Detroit Lions going forward. And if it can't be the Lions,
I have one of my buddies you that like I went the Lions. To school with. He actually plays on the Lions this year, and he's made the team. So he's going pretty
well,
good. Kevin Zeitler.
What's the guy's name?
Kevin Zeitler.
What's his name?
Kevin Zeitler.
Kevin Zeitler. Yep, and what was the high school?
Wisconsin Lutheran High School, class of 2008.
Ooh, you're young in yourself, I guess would be the expression. You're young in yourself. I give people my high school graduation date and I'm aging myself. Well, I'll be keeping my eyeballs peeled. Certainly. And if not the Lions, I'm probably going to be cheering for Kansas City.
Let's go.
Boy, that would be fun to see. I love the way that they play football right now and the vibe. Folks, I wanted to start the day off with, you know, those points of connectivity that we all share here in Wisconsin, which is our Packers and sports and the gosh darn weather. We always talk about these things because the theme of this week to me, in addition to the fact that we're ramping up for the inauguration. There's going to be these confirmation hearings. But the other theme for this week, and I think this is a theme going forward in the Trump administration, is you've got to kind of want to deal with some of the wonky legal things that are going on. Why do I say that this is not just going to be a theme this week, but going forward more generally? I say this because the courts, both state courts and federal courts, as we've been discussing, are going to be maybe one of the single most important guardrails or boundaries that will potentially rein in Donald Trump and what his administration tries to do. And so getting through some of the technicalities and understanding if they matter, and if so, why exactly they matter, and what do they say about how things will develop moving forward, becomes really important. And this week, in both state and federal courts, both outside of Wisconsin and here in Wisconsin, there are some really important sort of technical legal things going on. And here's the marker that I want to put down, even beyond, hey, we need to pay attention to what happens in these court cases, because I'll help you with that. I'm your friendly lawyer lady and nerdy economist that you can find here on Civic Media every Monday through Friday from 2 to 4 p.m., bringing my experience in the federal appeals court system, in federal practice, and then also here in state practice and working for the government and state and local government here in the state of Wisconsin, to bear on these issues. I will help you with all of that. But beyond that, it's not just about what's the wonk. It's about how quickly do the courts respond and get to the heart of these matters. Because what we've seen in terms of Donald Trump's criminal cases, that his tactic was what most deep-pocketed defendants, whether in civil or criminal court, know their best defense is, and that is delay. It's not to ever join issue or argue about the facts or bring everything to light. It's to delay those cases. And Donald Trump's strategy of delay has been incredibly, incredibly successful for him. And we are kind of seeing the last gasps of that strategy play out this very week. I keep refreshing my news update feeds to see if something has happened while we're on the air. Because whether or not the American public gets to see any of former special counsel Jack Smith's report on either January 6th or on the super secret stolen spy documents case yet remains to be seen. And guess who's deciding all of this? Aha, the federal courts. And there's a lot of weird stuff going on. It's complicated. I'll explain it. But again, the interplay between different levels of courts and sometimes state and federal courts can be complicated. But keep in mind, it's all about like how much time is passing. How long does it take to get through these things? So when we come back, I'm not going to start with the Jack Smith reports. Where I am going to start is the kerfuffle that is going on in North Carolina over their Supreme Court election that just happened. The difference in that election is 734 votes. And now we apparently have both federal and state courts weighing in on whether 60,000 ballots should be thrown out. I break it down, all coming up next. You're not going to want to go anywhere because we got a little bit of a Supreme Court race coming up right here in Wisconsin in April. You're not going to want to miss my breakdown, so keep it locked. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allball Show.
This message is sponsored by WisCaregiver.com. Now is the time to start a meaningful career as a caregiver. Make a real difference in people's lives. WisCaregiver.com gives you two great options for free. Train for the in-demand caregiver workforce as a CDCP, Certified Direct Care Professional. Or become a CNA, Certified Nurse Aide. All training is free. Plus, you can earn a $500 bonus. Learn more. Visit WisCaregiver.com.
Ever tried balancing a dozen eggs in one hand while hopping on one foot? Or maybe juggling cats while riding the unicycle. Sounds ridiculous, right? But guess what? That's exactly what texting while driving is like. Your human brain only has the capacity to focus on one thing at a time. So when you're behind the wheel, give driving your undivided attention.
Don't drive distracted. A message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, and the Ad Council.
The Dom Salvia Show.
Brad Schimmel, a J6 sympathizer, and he wants to be your next Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice. When he was Attorney General of Wisconsin, he spent thousands of dollars on memorial coins.
I would have been fired.
That stood for kicking ass every day. Hey, if you got to get a coin that says it, you're probably not doing it.
With your face on it.
The Dom Salvia Show. Weekdays from 4 till 6 on the Civic Media Radio Network and on the Civic Media app. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
I drew my brother's name one year and we went to the mall and I said, hey, while you're in there, grab me a Christmas card. We're doing the gift exchange later. So he walks upstairs, gets the card, hands it to me. I sign it, Merry Christmas. Love, Pete. And that was my gift to him that I made him pick out, pay for, and retrieve. He's like, you are the laziest, cheapest. It was absolutely beautiful.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Everywhere in Wisconsin and anywhere you've got the Civic Media app. So go download that one for free from your favorite app store. Take us everywhere you want to be. You can always get this great conversation and real news right here on Civic Media. Folks, my name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I want to talk about the Supreme Court election whose result is now entering, I don't know, its fourth week of who knows what's going to happen, a North Carolina election for their Supreme Court. It has been complicated, to say the least. And I'm going to tell you and bring you up to speed about what the status is as of today and what might happen next. And all of this matters because it seems to me that there is now a very out-in-the-open strategy from conservatives and especially sort of reinvigorated and leaned into in the MAGA movement, right? And that is to not question whether or not someone is actually a citizen of a state or of the United States and can vote, but to enact a lot of very technical, various voting requirements and bits of information beyond just showing an ID, to put in place layer upon layer upon layer of technical requirements to exercise your voting rights. And then when there are technical violations of these layers and layers of ever-increasing requirements, to then argue that ballots should be thrown out. Now, here is philosophically the problem with that. At base, first, our Constitution does not contemplate layers and layers and layers of what can be called restrictions on your voting rights. None of that's in the Constitution. So at some point, you can envision so many technical requirements to exercise your voting right that it would be unconstitutional. And remember, things like poll taxes and tests to evaluate your knowledge of government, yeah, those were all found to be unconstitutional eventually, coming out of the Jim Crow South. So the idea that then after an election, if your person doesn't win, you then seek to throw out tens of thousands of otherwise, and that's the important part, otherwise validly cast ballots, in other words, the person is a citizen of XYZ state and of the United States. They've cast a ballot. You know what they intend their vote to be. There's no question about that. And yet you're still trying to throw out their ballot. because, for example, they didn't include a zip code. Right? That is where we're at in terms of how many GOP state parties and campaigns are now seeking to steal elections. And this North Carolina Supreme Court race is the most current example of this. Donald Trump did this in 2020. Like, this was basically the argument. Oh, yeah, they forgot the zip code, or they didn't include their city on their absentee ballot, so throw it out. Right? That's what they did in Wisconsin. And it didn't work. And almost all states have some sort of preamble to their state law-based voting laws that says something like this. If the voter's intent is clear and there are no really important fundamental reasons to doubt that they are a qualified voter, you count their vote. So they try not to elevate the technical over what is this most fundamental, the most fundamental right of each and every citizen in an election. So that's kind of the meta contest. Why is this important? Well, because every single election, if they're really close in this state and in every other state, this is the kind of challenge that you can expect. Raising hyper-technicalities that don't have to do with the fundamental right to exercise a vote, trying to use hyper-technicalities to throw out ballots. The introduction of ever more burdensome technical requirements for voting, all under the guise of voting integrity and restoring the public's faith in our election process, right? Does this sound familiar? And by the way, I'm just going to drop this footnote. I do not think Democrats should spend any more time arguing about voter ID. Okay? Like, that ship has passed. What we should do, especially in the state of Wisconsin, and is acknowledge that voter ID is here to stay and help get voters the ID that they need to vote. I just don't think it's a good investment of our time to continue to fight the voter ID battle. By the way, most polls suggest that the majority of people think voter ID is a good thing. So, like, let's stop arguing about that and move on. But what they generically talk about under the umbrella of election integrity is going well beyond voter ID. Okay? And that is where we open this door to these post-election throw out these otherwise totally valid ballots on some hyper-technical, newly created list of requirements that Republicans are using to make it all the more harder for people to vote. Fact. Okay, that's where we're at. And again, we're going to have what is likely to be a very, very close election in April for control of our Supreme Court here in the state of Wisconsin. So this exact same thing is going on in North Carolina. So it's really important to us here to see, like, what's going on? Is it moving efficiently through the court system? Are North Carolina voters getting to certainty quickly? Because whatever the outcome is, it should be done expeditiously. In other words, North Carolina voters deserve to know, one, and two, what are the freaking rules, right? Like, clarify what are the essential requirements for a vote to count so that we can be clear about that. And by the way, why wouldn't they make these things clear before the election, Okay, when we come back, I'm going to start to explain what is exactly going on in North Carolina. And then, again, how is it that we might have both a federal and a state court weighing in on the exact same legal issues at the exact same time? Keep it locked and join our conversation, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. We'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
A new calendar year may be bringing a new administration to the White House, but one problem remains. We still don't have a farm bill. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orden says that's a priority for him. He serves Wisconsin's 3rd District. He's also on the House Agriculture Committee. He said aside from the farm bill, the other item that agriculture is looking for, some resolution in their employee work situation. And Van Orden believes a revised H-2A program may help.
I'm on the Agriculture Labor Working Group. We have 23 separate bipartisan recommendations, and most of them are focused on the H-2A program, streamlining that so that our farmers can have year-round, consistent, skilled, and I consider a herd manager is not unskilled labor. Let's be real clear about that. And someone who's working on diesel engines is not unskilled labor. I consider it skilled. We got to work on these definitions. But we need to streamline this program because you can't have a cow milking seasonally, can you?
That's Wisconsin Congressman Derek Van Orden. Aside from the farm bill and making sure that farms and agribusiness have reliable employee sources, he said he's also making it a priority to invest in domestically produced diesel fuel. He's calling for a reversal of the Biden administration's decision to ban offshore drilling of oil and gas.
Veltima fungicide out-yields the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre. But you've never been average. The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Beat your own record. Get every bushel you deserve. And make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe this spring with Heads Up seed treatment. Heads Up guards your seed from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking your seed dealer for Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
And today is the beginning of the Wisconsin Agribusiness Classic, a gathering of our cooperatives and farm service providers from across the state. New location for that event this year. They're gathering together at the Kalahari Resort in Wisconsin Dells. As a matter of fact, the Midwest Farm Report team will be there. That's just a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Monday. More available at MidwestFarmReport.com. Don't forget to sign up for our e-newsletter. I'm Pam Yonke.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
Sunny and cold today, with high temperatures only tapping the single digits and winds blustery, gusting up to 25 miles per hour, making our wind chills feel sub-zero all day long. And a few flurries flying around this evening with no accumulations expected. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 2 degrees below zero.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. You stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
The Republicans and Donald Trump want to impose tariffs. They say it's going to bring in $2.7 trillion.
That's what they say when they're trying to justify a tax reduction. Those broad tariffs are not good for the average American.
You know, Sandy, I'm not a guy that knows anything about calculus and any of those things, but I do know how to add and subtract. They're adding to the national debt.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on this show, our colleague Jimmy Cuska joins us to talk about potential changes within Wisconsin sports. Not everybody's happy. And how much money are we spending already on that Wisconsin Supreme Court race? Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
a mighty, mighty good man helping me put this show on for each and every one of you every day. His name is Cardi. He's my producer. If you want to give us a call and join this conversation, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. So in North Carolina, the Democratic candidate for Supreme Court won the last Supreme Court election by 734 votes. That is out of 5.5 million votes cast, which, you know, is a tiny sliver of a percentage. It's like, I think it's like 1/100th of a percent of votes. In response, her Republican opposition in that election filed a petition with the state elections board to throw out 60,000 votes based on things like the fact that North Carolina state now requires your social security number. It may also require, let's see, their social security number or their driver's license number. Even though they already have photo ID. Weird. And people didn't, some of these ballots didn't have that information. So the question becomes, what's the remedy, right? If it, they objectively don't have that information, is the remedy to throw out the vote? By the way, many of these people voted for years and years with their IDs in North Carolina. The other, one of the other challenges he raised were the votes of citizens living overseas who never lived in North Carolina, but whose parents are state residents. And a state law passed more than 10 years ago allows those overseas citizens to vote. All of this, of course, is one of those things where, why didn't you raise these issues and ask courts to clarify this before the election so that people would know what the possible consequences are? Okay, so the state elections board, he filed this challenge, throw out 60,000 ballots. Right after the election, the state elections board on a party line vote voted 3-2 to reject those challenges. He then filed in state court and asked the state Supreme Court to step in and enjoin the state elections board from certifying the election results. This gets a little scary because remember, in a lot of states, Wisconsin was one of them, where if you don't meet these state statutory deadlines for certification, especially of a presidential election, it can then lead to avenues or openings for people, you know, I don't know, come up with a fake slate of electors, that kind of a thing. Now, this is a state race within a state, so that, you know, those sorts of implications aren't relevant here. But again, think big picture. This is very important. So as he is pursuing this appeal of the state elections board decision, he gets this injunction from the state Supreme Court. His opponent tries to challenge that and remove the case from state court into federal court, saying that federal constitutional issues are primary and therefore the federal court should take jurisdiction. All of this is happening at the same time. A federal trial court judge weighed in last week and said, no, this should not be removed. I'm going to return this back down to state court because I think the state constitutional issues are actually more important. And fairly long, very technical decision from that federal court judge. So then it's back down in state court and this injunction issues. So that's kind of where we're at. That injunction is then challenged in state court by his challenger, as well as the district court, the federal trial court judge's decision to not permit the case to go forward in federal court is also appealed to the federal appeals court. So if you just lost track of what all that technical stuff was, I don't blame you. It is mightily hard to follow. Here's what the bottom line is. At the same time, in both state court and federal court, a lot of the same issues are being argued about the same fundamental case. So in state court, okay, They have required the parties to submit, the challenging party to submit a brief by January 14th. The elections board has to respond by January 21st. And then there's another response. So all of this is happening throughout January. That's the state Supreme Court. Okay. State court, file a brief about who's right and who's wrong as to why or whether these ballots should be thrown out or not. Schedule. They're arguing about the system. At nearly the exact same time. This, my friends, is what I'm going to call chaos. This is not good. This is not good for North Carolina. It's not good for our trust in the rule of law. It's not good for our trust in voting systems. It's bad for all of us. I don't care what your politics are. There should be very, very expeditious, fast resolution of these kinds of cases. And to be very honest with you, the idea that we would entertain throwing out tens of thousands of ballots from citizens, their citizenship is not being questioned in these cases, from citizens that were validly cast, is ridiculous. Should we not be entertaining some sort of state and federal set of laws that basically say any sort of requirement that you believe could be used as a basis to throw out a ballot, you are required to raise that issue at least 90 days or more before the election. You get where I'm going with this, right? So that like everyone would know, what are the rules that if I forget to cross my T or dot my I, my ballot might not count. Whatever that time period is, maybe it needs to be 120 days before the election. If you don't raise those challenges, then you don't get to do so after the game has been played. Because at the end of the day, what this is trying to change the rules or the impact of the enforcement of the rules after the game has been played. And that is not fair to any voter. And it shouldn't matter which candidate happens to win as to which voters get their rights taken away from them after the election. That is not a good outcome. Let's take a couple callers, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Hi, CJ. Let's take, I want to ask you a really baseline question that I hope takes it out of some of the partisan wrangling. Would it be fair, CJ, for you and I to agree that whatever the rules are about ensuring that your ballot is counted, right? Like whatever would disqualify a ballot from counting and whatever makes sure it gets counted, that we should all know that information before an election. Do you think that's fair, that that's a good approach?
Well, certainly. But I do think there's a difference between a recount and an audit. And
well, no, we're talking about neither here. So the case in North Carolina,
you're talking about the 60,000. You're talking.
Yeah, so just to be clear, CJ, they have been counted. There's no question about the count. What they're trying to do now is say these 60,000, even though we've counted them correctly, that's what a recount is about. It's like, did we get the numbers right? Even though the numbers have been calculated correctly, they're saying, even though those have been counted correctly, we should throw them out. That's a different argument. Does that make sense to you?
There's a difference, though. You won't respond to my statement.
I just did, CJ. I'm just trying to say this isn't about the number of ballots cast. This is about whether to throw out ballots.
That's what I'm talking about in any case. You're talking about should you know the rules. Well, I'm saying.
Right. So, CJ, I just want to try this one more time with you. And I know you get frustrated, but I want to keep us really narrowly focused because this is really important. If you and I agree that we should know the rules ahead of the election about if you don't include your zip code, your ballot will not be counted. that if that is the law, it should say that clearly. And if that is not the law, then even if there are technical infirmities, that's not what the law says.
That's
it says you shall. So this is actually like, this is important, CJ. That is not what the state law says. I've read it, because if the state law said that, it would be clear, right? That the penalty for failing to include your zip code or whatever it is, or your social security number, is that your ballot doesn't count. It doesn't say that. And that's important. Why should we allow otherwise completely validly cast? CJ, I have read the law. It doesn't say that those ballots should not be counted.
The point is, that's what makes a vote legal. And if it's following the law, if it's not followed, that vote should be tossed.
Then why don't we require the law to say that, if that's the legislative intent? In other words, there are all kinds of different technical requirements, and nearly every set of state laws, including North Carolina's, that says even if you have technical violations of these laws, if the voter intent is clear and they are a citizen and otherwise validly entitled to cast their ballot, it shall count. In other words, the laws build in as their policy that we're actually not supposed to take these technical violations and use that after an election to throw out votes. And the federal constitution doesn't allow significant burdens on a citizen's right to vote. That's sort of the rub of this. So my solution that I'm offering to you, CJ, is why don't we just say, if you want something to trigger throwing out a ballot, the law has to say that. And if it doesn't, you have to sue before the election. Wouldn't that resolve the very argument that you and I are having?
Well, first off, I'm glad to hear you're finally for voter ID, because you and your party's been fighting it for decades.
CJ, there you go, changing the topic. But I'm just making a political observation about voter ID. I'm just saying that ship has sailed. But today, wouldn't what I just suggested resolve this very argument between you and I?
I think when someone fills out a ballot, it should, first off, should have a pretty good reason to be an absentee ballot. There should be more restrictions, and kind of what we saw on the Wisconsin, you're all for the Wisconsin, to have it go to the Supreme Court in Wisconsin, because now the liberals or the left controls it. And all voting laws are supposed to go through the legislature. But
we're not talking about original jurisdiction, CJ. I'm just saying that if the argument continues to be, whether in Wisconsin or North Carolina, that if you don't have your zip code or you forget to add your city, and someone's going to say you throw out that ballot because they don't have that little bit of technical information, even though there's no question that they're a citizen and have a right to vote in the election, if those technical requirements are going to trigger throwing out a ballot, shouldn't the law either A, say so explicitly, or you have to sue to clarify that before the election? Doesn't that just make good common sense, CJ?
Well, I'm agreeing with you. You should know how to fill out a ballot.
I think he said he agrees with me. I'll just take it and run with it. I hope you all get my point that if we're going to start throwing out ballots, the law better be unequivocally clear that your ballot will be thrown out if you don't have your zip code on your ballot or on your absentee form. And two, if the law isn't that clear, then you better sue before the election. Otherwise, you're changing the rules of the game after the game has been played. We'll be right back. Take more of your thoughts and calls at 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Back with more in just a moment. Which means a lot to me, because good men are hard to find.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on. But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue.
made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. As we approach the 15th anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court's Citizens United decision, we consider the estimated $15.9 billion spent in the 2024 campaign. While still tallying up the total, Money and Politics watchdog Open Secrets estimates the 2024 election cycle was the costliest ever, surpassing 2020's $15.1 billion. For context, the $15.9 billion estimate is larger than the state budgets of New Hampshire, Vermont, and Idaho combined. Only 24% of political contributions to candidates were small donations of $200 or less, down from 30% in 2020. When you consider contributions to PACs and other outside spending, that percentage drops further with only 16% from small donors. The top 1% of donors, they contributed an estimated 50% of all political contributions. That means by far, our elections are not funded by citizens who actually vote, but by wealthy special interests and corporations whose interests may not align with the majority of voters. Open Secrets projects that outside spending alone, mostly by super PACs, will reach $5 billion. Now that the election is over, it's the inaugural fund setting records. The New York Times reports that donors to the Trump inaugural have contributed over $170 million. More on that tomorrow. We have more at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt Nair on air.
Yeah.
I try with CJs. Sometimes it just doesn't stick. I don't know. Folks, if you're just joining us, my name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm talking there's two sort of big picture concepts that I'm talking about in this hour. And the first one is we're going to see continued election lawsuits, like after the election. It has been the GOP that has filed election lawsuits where they make, frankly, technocratic arguments about little bits and drabs and dribs and things in election law and say, oh, well, you didn't include your zip code. Yeah, you're otherwise a citizen of North Carolina and a U.S. citizen. And you do have a right to vote. And here's your ballot. And yep, you clearly cast your ballot for candidate Jones. But, you know, because you don't have the zip code, your vote's now, quote, illegal and should be thrown out. But that's not what our Constitution says. And you can envision a world in which all of these little technical requirements, which the GOP seems enamored with layering more and more on every year, reach such a level that you do have clearly unconstitutional limitations on your franchise, which is our most fundamental right. And so my answer, my solution to all of this is, gee whiz, what we've got going on in North Carolina, where you've got both a federal court and the state court hearing arguments about the same case, and it's going on at the same time, and it's chaos and confusion, and the election's not certified. That's not a good approach. The good approach should say, if you want a ballot to be thrown out, the law has to say that that's the remedy for X, Y, and Z violation. And if it doesn't say that, you got to sue before the election, not after when you see, oh, well, I lost. Then I'm going to say that those get thrown out. That's not fair. Not fair at all. So that's thing one. The other really big picture that I'm pointing to and at is that courts' involvement and the legal system itself is going to be incredibly important in this second Trump term, right? Whether we're talking about an election in North Carolina or whether we're talking about whether or not the American people ever get to see Jack Smith's reports on the January 6th incitement of an insurrection by Donald Trump or the super secret spy documents that he stole. And I'm going to get to that eventually today. I wanted to take a couple more calls and some text messages. Len from Madison saying this, if a citizen's fundamental right to vote was really valued, there would not be so many obstacles prevented presented to exercising that vote. Yes, and that's why, as a concept, I have always opposed voter ID. It is actually a completely bogus, made-up problem, legislated, admittedly, on the record by numerous Republicans, including many Republicans in the state of Wisconsin. This is all about voter suppression. I'm saying it doesn't make sense to fight that battle anymore for Democrats as a political matter. It's here to stay. Let's arm people with the IDs that they need. But as soon as we start doing that, what will they do? Oh, there's this new thing that you have to have, and like the zip code and the signature and the social security number and blah, 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 blah. So why don't we just all agree? If the law's got to say, if you don't have X, your ballot gets tossed out. It needs to say that, or you have to sue and litigate about which ballots get tossed out for what technical failures before the election. That would certainly help, and we could all then play by the same rules. Andrew from Maine points out this: if you try hard enough, you can find a reason to throw out any ballot. Yes. Having been through the 2020 recount, that is indeed true. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Jack from Merrimack, you say what this afternoon, sir?
Well, this is just one additional reason why we absolutely need a law at the federal level that says, essentially, all American citizens who are adults have the right to vote, and anything that unreasonably interferes with that right is, whether it's a law, a regulation, even a court case, is null and void. And you could include things like egregious gerrymandering or unreasonably demanding voter ID, throwing out tens of thousands, not of votes that have already been made, but tens of thousands of people off the voter roll. People should have to be challenged one person at a time, not as a mass of thousands.
It's interesting that you mentioned that exact issue too, Jack, because that, of course, was attempted in Virginia. There have been regulations and DOJ rules that say you can't throw out en masse. You need a person-by-person determination, of course, and also DOJ regs that have said you can't do that within 90 days of an election. Of course, they tried to do it anyways. And this gets back to my point of both the law has to clearly say if there is this problem, the vote gets thrown out. And I completely agree with Jack that we need a federal law to clarify the inverse, that these kinds of infractions can never constitutionally result in throwing out a citizen's otherwise validly cast ballot for some bogus little technical reason, which, by the way, there are a couple of places that talk about legibility of signatures. Just think of that freaking nightmare. What's legible to you maybe ain't legible to me. So, you know, let's toss the, who'd they vote for? No, yeah, toss that one out, but not this other one. I mean, geez. Folks, I see you all on the text line. I know we got going. I've got a very special guest coming up, but stick around. I got Dom Salvia at 3:30. We'll talk more about this. Love to get Dom's take on it. My next guest, his name is, got to get out my guest briefing here. Where did Bobby Kogan? He's the senior director of federal budget policy at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. We're going to talk about this Trump budget reconciliation and what programs you and your family rely upon, the Trump and the MAGA party.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH, Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome the author of Building the Bucks, Jordan Tresky, and talk entertainment with Capital Times reporter Victoria Davis. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Matt Nair on Air.
It is our 1 year anniversary here on Matt Nair on Air. Thank you, Greg and Calvin, for being on this journey with me. It's been great.
Thanks for having me. I can't speak for Calvin.
I'm always thrilled to be here.
Unbridled.
The enthusiasm
enjoyment.
Brimming over from you, Calvin. I'm overwhelmed. Thank you.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A Gaza ceasefire and hostage release deal could be closer than ever in the 15-month war between Israel and Hamas. The Biden administration signaling that brokered talks are progressing. President Biden today delivering his final remarks at the State Department.
Palestinian people deserve peace and the right to determine their own futures. Israel deserves peace and real security.
Inauguration day now 1 week out, and security for President-elect Trump's swearing in will be heightened, with the Secret Service ramping up protection in the wake of assassination attempts during the Trump's campaign. In Southern California, firefighters on the front lines of two major wildfires still burning after a week of sparking, and crews are mobilizing once again with new red flag warnings in effect due to Santa Ana winds. At least 24 people have died in the Eaton and Palisades fires. Blue Origin scrubbed its new Glenn rocket launch today due to a technical issue. This is ABC News.